everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I am John Scott. I appreciate you joining me today. What is it? Wednesday, May 27th. Goodness gracious, we're almost into June. It was 81 degrees yesterday, a beautiful day. Just hanging around the house, recovering from Memorial Day, where I was picking weeds the whole day. It was fantastic. I love doing that sort of stuff. My back was paying for it this morning a little bit. But all in all, you got to love it. Head back to work on Tuesday. All I could think about was the NHL playoffs. I had a talk in Pittsburgh last week, so I didn't get to do any shows Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So we kind of rushed it to Monday, Tuesday. We got a couple episodes done, which were great. But a lot's happened. A lot has happened. The third round of the NHL playoffs has started. I wanted to do an episode so bad after the first game, Montreal versus Carolina, and Montreal waxed Carolina. All my prognostications, all my thoughts came to fruition. Montreal jumped all over Carolina. One game, one. They dominated Carolina. Looked like they were caught in quicksand. It was going to be a sweep for Montreal. And as we all know, Carolina came back and dominated the next two games. And we'll get to that in a second. And it made me look like a fool. But let's stay in the Western Conference, because that's where I was just watching. The Vegas Golden Knights just dispatched the Colorado Avalanche four straight. John Tortorella's second sweep of a President's Trophy champion in his coaching tenure. And honestly, a huge shock to most people in the hockey world, myself included. I thought coming into this series, Colorado would win. I thought they had the higher-end talent, they had the momentum, they had the rest. Everything was looking like they were just destined for Stanley Cup greatness. They had just outed the Minnesota Wild, who, in my opinion, was the third-best team in the NHL going into this playoffs. I thought Dallas was two, I thought Minnesota was three, and Colorado was by far and away the best team in the NHL. But that's why they play the game. You don't win the Stanley Cup based on regular season results. If that was the case, the President's Trophy champion would win every year, but they don't. The last time the President's Trophy champion has won the Stanley Cup was in 2013 when the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup. So there's a precedent of the best team in the regular season bowing out. But bowing out in this fashion is rare. Getting swept for rip in the Western Conference Finals is rare. But what happened to the Colorado Avalanche? Why did they get swept? Why did a team that was just coasting through this playoffs, they sweep the LA Kings in the first round 4-0. They get by the Minnesota Wild relatively unscathed 4-1 in the second round. Things were looking prime for a decent series with the Vegas Golden Knights. Vegas Golden Knights finished light years behind them in the regular season. Colorado didn't lose more than three games in a row in the regular season. They had all these records. They were vying for the best regular season in history in the first half of the season. And it ends like this. Very disappointing, very dejected. Nathan MacKinnon sitting on the bench after the Vegas Golden Knights put that second goal in, shaking his head. Even though they scored shortly after that, they could not muster up a tie. It was sad to see a guy of his caliber, a man of his talent, just sitting there. Just shaking his head saying, what happened to this season? Because it happened in a blink of an eye. We're going every other game in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. Every other day, excuse me. So they were done in 6 days, 7 days. They're out of the playoffs. You get to go home. And how did it happen? Were the Vegas Golden Knights that strong? Were they that dominant of a team? Short answer, yes, they were. Long answer, there was reasons for that. And the main reason is, and I said it before this series even started, excuse me. I said if Cale Makar is not playing, the Vegas Golden Knights have a chance. And lo and behold, Makar didn't play the first two games. Games three and four, he wasn't his typical self. He was making turnovers. He was rusty. His shots weren't as sharp. His burst wasn't as energetic as it usually is. He wasn't making the reads that he did during the regular season in the first couple rounds of the playoffs. So he wasn't the Cale Makar that we know and love. And then to compound that, best player on their team, Nathan MacKinnon, gets injured. And so he is not even a factor in game three. He comes back in game four. He has a little bit of that bounce back, but he's not the same player. And when you lose your two best players, there's no chance. No team in the world can recover from that. Even a President's Trophy champion, who is a deep team like the Colorado Avalanche are. But their flaws were exposed. The reason they lost this series wasn't because Cale Makar was injured. It obviously was a main factor, but it was the fact that there was nothing behind Cale Makar. Nothing at all. And when you look at this Colorado Avalanche and when you look at their back end, when you eliminate Cale Makar, who the hell is left? Who else do you have that can be that puck-moving defenseman that you need to get a breakout going, jump up in the rush, be that offensive threat, quarterback the power play, be the guy? They didn't have anybody. Devin Taves, he tried his darndest to fill that void. Brent Kulak is not that guy. Malinsky is not that guy. Manson and Burns, they're big body defensemen who play the body. They're not puck-moving, fleet-footed defensemen who can jump into the rush, who can cycle in the offensive zone, who can be creative, who can be a threat when they're on the ice. I'm not saying the Avalanche needed to have a guy exactly like Cale Makar. That's impossible to duplicate. But you needed someone to fill that void. And correct me if I'm wrong, they had someone similar to that who they traded away this season to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Brett Kulak. It was Samuel Girard. And I'm not saying Girard is anywhere near as effective or talented or as good as a Cale Makar, but he does have those same assets, that same skill set. He's a smaller defenseman, 5'9". He takes risks. He's not afraid to, you know, toe the line on the blue line when he's in the offensive zone. He's a decently offensively gifted defenseman. Year on year, he puts up 30 points. That's kind of his high watermark. They traded him away. They felt like they needed a more physical defense back there. Why? I don't know. They already had Josh Manson. Brent Burns is a shell of his former self when I played with him in San Jose and Minnesota. He is a stay-at-home defenseman now. He is not this offensive wunderbar who he used to be, where he's up in the rush, he's shooting all the time, he's, you know, diving in the offensive zone, he's making all these great plays. He's more of a composed defenseman who picks his spots and takes care of his own end and, you know, gets a shot off every once in a while. He's 41 years old, for Pete's sake. Brett Kulak is not an offensively gifted guy. Devin Taves is a good Robin to the Batman, which is Cale Makar. So the fundamental flaw of this back end was they had nobody besides Cale Makar. And if he goes out like he did, you're in trouble. This decor without him stinks, for lack of a better words. They were atrocious in game one and two. Vegas Golden Knights had their way in the defensive zone. Brent Burns was turning the puck over at will. Brett Kulak was a non-factor. Devin Taves was being overwhelmed with the amount of ice that he was getting. Sam Malinsky was in over his head. It was just too much. And then even when he did inject himself back into the lineup in games three and four, he wasn't the same guy, like I mentioned before. And it was noticeable. The reason the Colorado Avalanche lost this series was their defense. That's it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Yes, they could have scored more goals. Yes, they could have had more maybe goals. Their offensive zone time was through the roof. They threw more pucks at the net. They got more shots on goal. But the reason they lost was their defense. They were not up to the task. They weren't helping offensively, and they weren't shutting things down defensively. They were a non-factor. Yes, would it help if Brock Nelson would score a damn goal? Yeah, that would have been nice. The guy had more chances than anybody else in this series, and he could not find the back of the net. It was frustrating for me. I can't imagine for Colorado Avalanche fans and players alike watching this guy get grade A chance after grade A chance after grade A chance, breakaways, two-on-ones, rebounds, breakaways, nothing. All very lackadaisical-looking shots that Carter Hart was just picking cherries. Glove, glove, glove. Let's try the blocker. Blocker. Nothing was working for Brock Nelson at all in these playoffs. The same can be said for Kadri and Nachos and Ross Colton and Waugh and Connor. This team is deep. This team was built to win the Stanley Cup. They're strong down the middle. The addition of Nazem Kadri and Nicholas Waugh just filled those voids in the center position that they didn't really have. They still had Brock Nelson and Nathan MacKinnon, but it just bolstered that center position to a point where it was like, damn, we have a plethora of assets down the middle. Not to mention Jack Drury on the fourth line was great. Their fourth line was fantastic with Parker Kelly and Joel Kvaranta. It was the defense. It was the defense and the goaltending. Mackenzie Blackwood played fantastic last night. He was lights out. Scott Wedgwood looked just uneasy when he was in the net. He did not look composed. He always looked not confident. Mackenzie Blackwood last night played lights out. Without him, this game is 4-1, 5-1. He was very, very good. So Cale Makar being out, that was the biggest issue for the Avalanche. I know that McKinnon was hurt. I think they could have won even without McKinnon in the lineup. It was the Cale Makar show. Once he got injured, and I said this in the show last week, the only hope for the Vegas Golden Knights to win this series, and maybe that was strong, but if you have a healthy Cale Makar and you have a healthy Nathan McKinnon, I think the Avalanche win this series. It's a hell of a series, and it's maybe going 6-7 games, but I think the Avalanche come out ahead. They're a different team when those two guys are healthy and playing at 100%. Makar being out 1-2 and then being a shell of his former self in 3-4, it showed the fundamental flaw of this team. They did not have depth on the back end. They should have kept Samuel Girard. Maybe that would have improved their chances, at least to have a guy who can move the puck. It was frustrating watching Manson and Burns and Kulak and Malinsky try to make plays. It was just turnovers. It was just misguided chances at the wrong time. Turnovers left and right and center, and the Vegas Golden Knights capitalized because they are a well-coached team. John Tortorella, for all his misgivings and all his, you know, bombastic personality, we're not talking to the press, we're getting fined $100,000, all these things. He's a hell of a coach. I played for him with the New York Rangers. The guy knows how to coach. He knows how to get the most out of his team. And more importantly, he knows how to game plan. He's a master game planner. He always wins the changing, the matching lines. He's great at that. He mix matches his lines. He's always deploying guys in great situations so they can succeed, and he nailed it on this. But let's move on to the Vegas Golden Knights and pump their tires, because everyone's going to say, oh, McKinnon and Makar, and rightfully so, but the Vegas Golden Knights played a perfect series. First and foremost, their goaltending was fantastic. Carter Hart, you know, in the regular season, the Vegas Golden Knights goaltending was terrible. And that's the main reason why they finished where they did and how their record was atrocious, because in the regular season, no goaltender had a save percentage above 8.93. Akira Schmid, he played 34 games, 16-10, but his numbers were absolutely dog poo. Carter Hart, same thing. I know he finished 11-3. His save percentage was sub 9. His goals against was 2.7. The same can be said for Aiden Hill. He played 27 games. He was bad. And, you know, I don't know who Carl Lindholm is. Lindholm. But he was bad too. So everybody knew the goaltending was the main issue for the Vegas Golden Knights. They had depth. They had defense. They had scoring. They had everything you wanted for a solid Stanley Cup contender. But they needed goaltending. And I've said this time and time again. You don't need a superstar goaltender to win the Stanley Cup. We've seen that. Yes, we've seen a Sergei Bobrovsky and a Valesky and all these guys, Vasilevsky, excuse me. That's great if you have that asset in between the pipe, but you don't need that. And I think the Vegas Golden Knights are showing that. Yes, Carter Hart has been fantastic. He has been lights out this playoff round, but he is making the saves that he should make, and he's also throwing in a couple highlight reel saves for the Vegas Golden Knights. But what the Knights do is they limit grade A chances against. When you watch the games that they play, it's, you know, not a lot of shots get into Carter Hart. The ones that are getting through are pretty savable shots. And then he comes up with the odd, you know, power play save, or excuse me, penalty kill save, or the odd defensive breakdown where he makes a save. This series just happened to be on Brock Nelson every single time that the Colorado Avalanche got through. It was Brock Nelson, and Carter Hart just casually throws the glove out and robs him. It was that. It was Jack Eichel. Jack Eichel, it's frustrating to watch some teams, especially on the power play, their entry, because that's become the hot button topic over the last 10 years in the NHL, is how do you enter the zone on the power play? There's been all these revolutionary ways. Now the big fantastic one is the dropping it back and giving it back to the guy with speed. And then you're going to drop it back a second time and then a third time. And what that does, it just forces the D zone, the defensive team, into their D zone, because you can only gap up so long. And then the fear sets in of having a Connor McDavid or somebody flying at you at a million miles an hour and just skating right around you. You would love to hold the blue line and to force them to dump it in. The goaltender can come out. It gives you a chance to clear the puck. It's hard to do that when you're worried about a guy just screaming by you. The Vegas Golden Knights do it differently. And Jack Eichel is that guy. He just casually gets the puck in the neutral zone. He has a little bit of speed, but he just manages to weave his way through the defending team. This at this time, it was the Avalanche. And he casually just drops it to Mitch Marner or William Karlsson or whoever it is posted up at the blue line. And he just chips it over to them. And then they've entered the zone and they have all the time in the world. It's an art form. And Jack Eichel is the best at it. The best I've ever seen. I've seen other guys try to weave their way through on all these other teams, whether it's a Draisaitl, whether it's a McDavid, all these other superstars, Kucherov, they aren't as effective as Jack Eichel. And I can't put my finger on it because everybody has the same skill as Jack Eichel, but he just has the smarts and awareness of where to attack that PK and the perfect time to dish it off to, at this time, it's Mitch Marner who's playing the point for them, just to chip it over to him. And it's just such a lazy, usually a backhand behind his back to Mitch Marner that it almost looks like an afterthought that he's not even trying, but it works every single time. It's a beautiful thing. And Jack Eichel is the supreme just example of what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. This guy does not care about individual stats because if he wanted to, he could go out and just fill the net. The guy could just put points up left, right, and center. And he still does. He's got 18 points in 16 games. Like, he's still putting up very, very solid stats. But he still plays a strong defensive game. He's still worried about blocking shots and getting back on defense and just being that anchor for his line in the D zone. He is a fantastic 1C who the Buffalo Sabres are probably kicking themselves for trading him. But man, is he good. He impresses me every time he's on the ice. And the beautiful thing about the Vegas Golden Knights, and I said it with the Avalanche, this team is so strong down the middle. When you look at the two center groups for these two teams, they're fantastic. The Vegas Golden Knights have Eichel, Karlsson, Sissons, and Nick Doubt. That's a hell of a lineup down the middle. It's a hell of a lineup down the middle. And this Vegas Golden Knights team, I hate calling them the Vegas Golden Knights. It's so long. It doesn't roll off the tongue like the Avalanche or other teams. It's just like, even Golden Knights, I don't like it. But this team, I don't see a weakness on this team. Coming into this playoffs, it was goaltending. It's like, that's going to be their downfall. And now that Carter Hart is standing on his head, they have three solid lines that can score. Find a weakness on these three lines. I defy you. With the emergence of Brett Howden playing with William Karlsson and Mitch Marner, all three lines are top-level lines. You got Barbashev and Dorofiev with Eichel. That's a one line. You got Howden, Karlsson, and Marner. That's a number one line. Then you got Hurdle, Sissons, and Stone. That's a number one line. It's incredible that they were able to assemble these guys. And then on the back end, you got McNabb, Theodore, Hanifin, Anderson. Those four defensemen are so good, especially Hanifin and Anderson. They are the best defensive pairing in the NHL right now. But let's get to the man of the hour. It's Mitch Marner. At this point in the NHL, he is the best player on the planet. And watching him more and more as we have in these playoffs, he was kind of hidden this regular season just because he was in Vegas, playing out west, didn't have the greatest of seasons, still put up some decent points, but wasn't, you know, lighting the world on fire like he did when he was with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And that was by design. The Vegas Golden Knights are a more balanced team. He wasn't, you know, put in positions all the time where he was scoring and getting a ton of ice time. He was just out there when he had to be out there and he was putting up points. But man, is he good. He is the best player on the planet. He makes everybody around him better. I saw a pie graph of players playing with Marner and without Marner. He unanimously makes everybody better on his team. And now he's been playing with Brett Howden and William Karlsson. They're fantastic. Especially Howden and him. The chances that he gives guys who he plays with, grade A scoring chances, if he were to play with snipers all the time, and which is impossible because you can't play with snipers all the time, he would get so many assists. If he were to get the assists that he deserves based on the grade A chances that he sets up, the guy would have 35 points in these playoffs. It seems like every game he is just setting up guys for grade A chances 5, 6, 7 times a game. And he's not doing this by sacrificing on the D zone. There was a great play this game 4 versus the Avalanche. Nazem Kadri came screaming in the offensive zone. I think they were up 1-0 at the time. the Knights defenseman had vacated. I think he had pinched up and Marner was left to fill the spot. He stands up Nazem Kadri at the blue line like it was nothing. And Kadri's probably got 30, 40 pounds on him. He's coming at him full speed. And Marner just fills him in. He doesn't blow him up. He doesn't bury him. It's not an earth-shattering check. But he just does his job. And it's the guy's a stud. I said it for years and years with Toronto. He is the best player on that team. He was the straw that stirred the drink. He was the guy they should have built the team around. They didn't. They let him go. Now he's with the Vegas Golden Knights. And newsflash, remember when I said a few weeks or month ago that the greatest thing that could happen in these playoffs is that the Knights win and Marner gets to Conn Smythe? That's going to happen. That's happening. The Knights are going to win the Stanley Cup. I don't care who they play, whether it's the Canadiens or the Hurricanes. There is no world, and mind you, I said the same thing about the Avalanche, so maybe I should just shut up. The Knights will win the Stanley Cup, and Marner will win the Conn Smythe. The guy's got 7 goals, 14 assists, 21 points in 16 games. It is his Conn Smythe to lose. Unless Carter Hart goes off and like gets 4 shutouts for 4 wins in the Stanley Cup Finals, but I don't see that happening. That's crazy, you guys. The Toronto Maple Leafs let this guy walk for essentially nothing. And now he's going to win the Conn Smythe in his first year away from the Toronto Maple Leafs and win the Stanley Cup. That is the biggest suck it, the Generation X that I've ever seen. That is Shawn Michaels on the top rope, just blasting the X and Triple H and all those guys to the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is the biggest own in NHL history. This is worse than Phil Kessel. This is fantastic for the NHL. And Mitch Marner looks so incredibly good. This team is deep. This team is motivated. This team just dispatched the President's Trophy winners, and they did not even break a sweat. That's it. They did not even break a sweat. They weren't even challenged in all 4 games. It was systematically, they were down 3-0 in game 3. And they said, all right, time to go. Boom, boom, boom. 4 straight, 4-3 win. That was it. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. The Vegas Golden Knights are obviously in the Stanley Cup, but they are the prohibitive favorites. I don't care if Carolina wins. Vegas has to be odds-on favorite to win the Cup. Let's just talk on the Western Conference a little bit, because coming into these playoffs, I was optimistic that we were going to get some good playoff series. The West has been the biggest disappointment as far as playoffs go and entertaining and just engagement. Not one series have I been engaged in. They all seemed like a formality. Maybe the Minnesota-Dallas one, but not even that much. I think Minnesota went up 3 rip in that series and Dallas came back to make it 3-2. So it wasn't even that entertaining. It's been 4-2. It's been 4-0. It's been 4-1. That's it. No series has gone to 7 games. I didn't do the research, but I wonder if that's a record where no series goes to 7 games in one conference. There's only been 2 series that have gone to 7 games in the whole playoffs, and both have been involved Montreal. So it's been a pretty much of a snooze fest in the Western Conference. But here we are. The Knights are in the Stanley Cup Finals. The Colorado Avalanche, it's your fault for not, A, keeping Samuel Girard, or B, going out and getting somebody who could fill in if Cale Makar went down. Maybe they thought Brent Burns was that guy. He's 41 years old. What do you expect? They didn't have anybody else in the cupboard. It was sad to see the state of that team in Game 3 when McKinnon got hurt. Makar wasn't the same guy, and they had a power play, and it was nothing. There was nothing there. They had no answers. There was no flow. There was no movement. It was basically just 5 guys on the ice going, we don't know who to give the puck to, because Makar and McKinnon are our whole team, and now they're not here, so what do we do? I think Nachos was exposed as not being that guy. I think Landeskog was invisible. I know. Natchez stunk. Landeskog stunk. All the defensemen were exposed as kind of secondary guys. Nobody was willing to step up or able to step up to fill that void. It was a pretty just demoralizing but also sobering realization for the Colorado Avalanche, where it's like, damn, we really rely on these 2 guys a lot. And that's not where you should be as a franchise. You should be able to weather the storm. If a couple guys go out, you should be able to just hold the fort. And they could not even come close in any of those games. So moving forward for the Colorado Avalanche, what do you do? And maybe this is the issue when you sign these guys to these big level contracts, and they're not even making that much money, but like, what do you do when your top guys go out? You can't do anything. So it is what it is. Nate just kicks in next year at 11.5. You got McKinnon at a reasonable 12.6, but I don't know. You have to find something to fill out that back end. A team that we thought was unbeatable, all of a sudden you found their weakness, their Achilles. You hit them right in the foot. They found their kryptonite. You just hurt Cale Makar. And this is a very pedestrian team when that guy is out of the lineup. Pretty shocking. All right, moving east. Montreal, Carolina. This team enter. This game is going to be game four tonight. The Carolina Hurricanes have just absolutely worked the Montreal Canadiens the last two games. Jakub Dobusch deserves some kind of award. He is the only player that is playing for the Montreal Canadiens. It's been amazing to see him keep this team in the game. Montreal could be up 3-0. That's how good Dobusch has been playing. The Canadiens have not done anything to warrant even being close in this series the last two games. They've been outplayed in every facet of this game. Power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5. It has not even been close. The shots are not even a true barometer of how bad the Canadiens have played. But the good thing is, it's 2-1. They're still very much in this series because this is a result of them not playing good. They don't shoot the puck. They don't go for rebounds. They don't hit the net even when they do shoot the puck. Does anybody else get a sense that when the Montreal Canadiens get a shot and they're averaging 12 shots a game in the last two games, it's a grade A chance. They don't want to just throw the puck on the net and hope for the best. They don't want to just live to play another day. They're always trying to get that perfect grade A chance in the offensive zone, east-west, east-west. And then Carolina's too good defensively at some points to play that game with. You have to overwhelm them with shots. You have to keep them on their heels. You have to play the way that they play. And the Montreal Canadiens refuse to do that. And until they just humble themselves and say, hey, the Carolina Hurricanes are too good defensively to play this style of hockey, we have to get in the mud a little bit. We have to just grease it up and throw pucks at the net and hope for a rebound. Until they do that, they will lose this series. And the question is, can they do that? Can Martin St. Louis get these guys just to throw the puck on the net? Can you convince a Slakovsky or a Caulfield or a Demidov or any of these high-end talents who love having the puck on their stick, who love to make those dipsy-doodle ticky-tack passes, the back and forth, like they did on the power play goal with Hudson and Caulfield. Beautiful goal. But you can't do that every time. Can he convince these guys to just play a greasy style of hockey, a playoff-style game? I don't know if he can. This is a young Montreal Canadiens team. They're set in their ways in a certain sense where they don't know how to win. They don't know how to transition their game. But if he can, if he can get these guys, because there will be times where they can make those plays, but that's like 20% of the time. If he can convince them the other 80% of the time to just throw the damn puck on the net, and then see what happens. And if nothing happens, then come back and play defense, because they're a hell of a good defensive team. They block shots. They're all playing the same way. They're not sacrificing offensive for defense, but what they're not doing is optimizing their offensive chances, if that makes sense to you. They're not utilizing the things that Carolina is giving them. And Carolina is taking away the east-west. They're taking away the grade A chances. So when that happens, you have to just flood everything to the net and find a different way to get chances, find a different way to score goals. There's a reason Alex Newhook is so successful. There's a reason Zach Bolduc is scoring goals. There's a reason why Tessier and Deneau are scoring goals, is because they go to the dirty areas, they get rebounds, they get tip-ins, and they score unconventional goals. Not every goal can be a backdoor tap-in for Cole Caulfield on the power play. Not every goal could be a tic-tac goal between Hudson and Slakovsky and Suzuki, and it's a beautiful goal that's going to be on the highlights forever. Those are very rare in the playoffs. Those are very exceedingly rare the further you go in the playoffs. You have to score greasy goals. Something has to go off your ass into the net. Something has to go off your elbow. By the way, that goal that was disallowed, I think it was Demidov, or who was it? That's 100% goal. Or I'm thinking that was Barbashev with the Vegas Golden Knights. Did you guys see that disallowed goal? Absolutely atrocious call by Toronto. I just got reminded of that. It was awful. Awful. Goes to Toronto, definitely off his stick, and they called it off because it was off of his glove. It was definitely off of his stick. It might have been a high stick. That's debatable. The fact that they said it's off his glove is just crazy. Terrible, terrible call. Back to the Montreal Canadiens. They're still in this. Their defense has been playing pretty good. Matheson, Hudson, I like Struble. I like Dobson. They're playing okay. Their offense just need to just simplify it. Throw pucks on the net. Overwhelmed Anderson. I don't think Anderson is playing that well. And then score some greasy goals. Then you gain confidence. Then Carolina gets a little nervous. Then you can be a little more creative. But just throw the damn puck in the net. And good things will happen. I don't know how they don't see Carolina. That's what's happening with Carolina. They've been doing it for years and years and years. They overwhelm you. They get into the zone. They throw pucks on the net. They get puck retrieval. And they do it again and again and again. And that's how they score goals, the majority of them. So if Montreal can do that, they will win this series. Because the Carolina Hurricanes, even though they're getting 30, 40 shots on net, they're still only scoring 3 goals. This is not an offensively gifted team. I know Svechkov got the game winner, but it wasn't a great goal. It was a bad play by the Montreal Canadiens. Lane Hudson just throws it away and they turn the other way. If the Canadiens can just get some zone time, throw the pucks on the net, they will win this series 4-3 or 4-2. I truly believe that. Can they do that? I don't know. But we will find out tonight. I appreciate everybody for listening. I hope you had a fantastic Memorial Day if you're in Canada. I hope you had a great May 2-4. We're back. Stanley Cup is upon us, potentially. Thanks for joining me, and I will talk to you guys later.